Welcome back to the Rav Hirsch on Chumash series on OU Torah for Parshas Vayishlach. And I want to begin this week's share with a discussion of Rav Hirsch's explanation for the Isser of Gid HaNasha, which is in this week's Parsha, after Yaakov has his fight with the Malach and is injured on the Gid HaNasha. So the Pasuk tells us at the end of Parak Lamed Beis, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Al Kein Lo Yochlu V'nei Yisrael as Gid HaNasha. Therefore, the Bnei Yisrael do not eat this Gid HaNasha, which is the sciatic nerve, Asher al kaf hayorech, which is on the thigh, ad hayom hazeh, and this prohibition continues until this very day, kino gam b'chaf yerech Yaakov b'gid HaNasha, because the Malach touched Yaakov on his thigh on the Gid HaNasha, and he dislocated it and injured him there. So first, Rav Hirsch begins by tracing the etymology of the word Nasha, and to explain its meaning before delving into an explanation of why we are prohibited from eating the Gid HaNasha. And he explains that the root Nun Shin Hei, Nasha, we find in other contexts referring to a state of not being in full control. So for example, he shows how the word Nosha, which means a creditor, which we find, for example, Parashas Mishpatim, Kesef Talve'es Amias He'oni Imach Lo Siyelo Kenosha. So a Nosha is someone who lends somebody else money, and in that situation, he doesn't have full control over his own money, his own property, because it is in the hands of somebody else, and he is waiting to get it back. So that is a Nosha from the same root. Rav Hirsch also shows how, interestingly, he traces the word Nashim, the plural of for women, to this root of Nosha. He says, however, this is different from the singular for a woman, which is Isha. The singular woman is Isha because that comes from Ish. In Parshas Bereishis, the Pasuk says that straight out, that it's Ki Me Ish Lu Ka Chazos, that woman is taken from man. And Rav Hirsch says that when in private, when alone, so an Isha is equivalent to Ish. They are on the same footing. It's Ki Me Ish Lukachazos. The name for a woman is connected to the name for a man. They are the same. But when mentioned in a group setting, in public, as a plural, the word is Noshim from this root of Noshe, because in the public sphere, the woman is meant to relinquish some of her rights. And her she relinquishes those to her husband, so she is Nosha. She is not in full control necessarily, because in certain areas of the public sphere, her husband is her representative. So there's a distinction there, interestingly, between Isha and Nashim, and the two different roots that communicate the different roles of women from a Torah point of view in public and in private. In public, being Nashim, but in private being Isha, equivalent on an equal footing to the Ish. So with this understanding of the meaning of the word Nosha, meaning it is the gid, the sinew, the nerve that of which he was not in full control. Because once Yaakov was injured on this Gid HaNosha, he was no longer in full control of his ability to walk, of his legs, that He, at this point, he began to limp, and although Rav Hirsch talks about how the bone structure is there and the muscles are there, but he's not able to fully control them. He can't use them properly, and he becomes handicapped. That's why it's called the Gid HaNasha, because its name gets its name from this story, where Yaakov's ability to walk is hampered because of this gid. So it's the Gid HaNasha, the gid which left Yaakov not being in full control of his ability to walk. Having said that, Rav Hirsch then goes on to point out that this Isser of Gid HaNasha is not merely a historical commemoration. It's not just something we do to remember an event that was once upon a time that happened to our great-great-great-grandfather. It's beyond that. It must communicate a message to us. He writes that similar to the prohibition of chametz, which ostensibly commemorates the fact that the bread of the people leaving Mitzrayim did not have time to rise, but it's not just a commemoration of a something that happened many years ago, but the fact that that occurred, it communicates a lesson. It communicated a lesson to the people at that time, to our ancestors who were going through that situation in Mitzrayim, and that same message is communicated to us in our time every Pesach when we clear out the chametz from our homes and we do not eat chametz. And what exactly that message is, maybe we'll get to it in our Shir on Parshas Bo, but here with the Gid HaNoshe, it's the same idea that Hashem is communicating a message to Yaakov Avinu by having him injured in the Gid HaNoshe. And that same message is communicated to us Ad Hayom Hazeh through this prohibition of Gid HaNoshe. So what is this message that Hashem is communicating? So Rav Hirsch explains that the idea of Yaakov being unable to walk, unable to control his own footing, the message of that is that Yaakov was not defeated completely by the Saros Shel Esav, by this Malach, that Esav and his representatives cannot completely vanquish Yaakov, but they can harm his material power. They can harm his foundation, his strength, his physical strength, his physical power. That can be hurt and weakened by the Saros Shel Esav, but it does not knock him out completely. And so to Yaakov Avinu, this was communicating a message that would be important for his descendants to remember throughout history. Because throughout history, in Galus, which is the state of life that Yaakov represents, there are often times where Jews have been disadvantaged from a physical, material standpoint, having no firm foundation, in a sense limping through history without having the ability to thrive and flourish materially. Not being able to have any control over that aspect of their lives. And in a sense, just not having any stability. Much like Yaakov Avinu is limping, he's unstable. So the Jews also throughout history have been unstable and have been unable to have a firm footing to stand on. But nevertheless, they continue to survive. And it's specifically in this way that Hashem wants Klal Yisrael to live, Rav Hirsch writes, because if and he's using Yaakov as an example, Rav Hirsch says, that if Yaakov has an army of 400 warriors like Esav has, then his invincibility is not a sign of Hashem's presence and Hashem's guidance in his life. It's his invincibility will be attributed to his physical power, to his strength. Instead, Hashem specifically wants Yaakov and his descendants to be weak from a material and physical standpoint, to be in a situation where their continued perseverance cannot be attributed to their own strength and cannot be attributed to their own possessions and what they have, but it can only be attributed to Hashem above, who guides us and takes care of us, and it thus the continued survival of the Klal Yisrael is indicative of the hand of Hashem throughout history. And we remember this by not eating the Gid HaNoshe. Now, it's also important to remember that for us, the Gid HaNoshe really carries no meaning. We don't pick up a piece of meat anymore and discard the Gid HaNoshe, because we get our meat from the store, and the butchers have already taken care of it. They've chopped off the entire hindquarters and thrown it out or sold it to somebody. And we don't even have to go through that process. But of course, there was a time not so long ago where people did their own shechita and or used the entire animal, and they knew what they were doing. They knew how to identify the Gid HaNoshe, and they went through the hindquarters of the animal and they removed the Gid HaNoshe. And it's not a simple process to remove the nerve and to remove all the little branches of the nerve throughout the leg, throughout the meat. And it's no simple process. And to a butcher who is sitting over a piece of meat and painstakingly removing this Gid HaNoshe, there's a message there. You really feel this message that there is something to this Gid HaNasha. Why are we taking this out? And so the idea is that every time that a Jew wants to sit down to eat a piece of meat, he needs to take this piece of meat first and painstakingly remove the Gid HaNasha, reminding himself of this idea, writes our first, reminding himself of this idea that we remove the Gid HaNasha, we willingly give up control over our physical and material strength, we willingly pull it out and throw it away, and we give that part of our existence over to Hashem. And we know that we cannot stand on our own strength and we cannot depend on it. All we can depend on in all aspects of our lives is the guidance and the providence of Hashem. And that is the message of the removal of the Gid HaNasha. And that's the message meant to communicate to us, which for us, we it's harder for us to really feel, like I said, because we don't actually remove the Gid HaNasha ourselves anymore. But it's still a message that is worthwhile for us to take to heart. And so, and I'm going to quote here from Rav Hirsch's words. He writes, to summarize really briefly the idea of the Gid HaNasha, he writes that if Yaakov falls, he falls not because of his limited physical power, but because he fails to cultivate God's protection. Conversely, if Yisrael stands firm, it is not because of his physical and material strength, but because God bears him aloft on the eagle's wings of his almighty power. That's the message of the Gid HaNasha. And that's that we acknowledge that truth when we remove the Gid HaNasha and refrain from eating it. Now, Rav Hirsch adds, very interestingly, he cites a Gemara in Maseches Chulin on the subject of Gid HaNasha, which cites a section from Yeshaya, and it's very interesting how Rav Hirsch reads into the words of the pasuk and reinforces his understanding of this Isser through those psukim in Yeshaya. So there's a Gemara in Maseches Chulin, and the Gemara is found on Daf Tzadi Aleph. And there the Gemara is just discussing, discussing Gid HaNasha. It's in the parak of Gid HaNasha and Maseches Chulin. And there the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina said, Mai dichsiv, what's the meaning of this pasuk in Sefer Yeshaya in the ninth parak? It says, Dovar sholach Hashem b'Yaakov v'nofal b'Yisrael. Hashem has sent Dovar, something, to a word to Yaakov, and it has fallen among Yisrael. So he explains, Davar shalach Hashem b'Yaakov, Hashem sent a word to Yaakov, Zeh Gid HaNasha, that refers to the prohibition of Gid HaNasha, which was given to Yaakov at that time. V'nafal b'Yisrael, it has fallen among Yisrael, he explains, Sheposhat Isuro b'chol Yisrael, that the prohibition has spread among all of Klal Yisrael. And that's it. That's the end of the discussion here. It just picks up on one single pasuk in Yeshaya and says that it's talking about Gid HaNasha. But Rav Hirsch says that we should look at the context of that discussion in Yeshaya, those psukim in Yeshaya, and it really reinforces his idea of what the Gid HaNasha means. So I'm going to read you the psukim, but feel free to see them inside. It's in Yeshaya Perek Tes, and it begins in Pasuk Zayin. And this is Yeshaya speaking to the Jews of the Malchus Yisrael, towards the end of the kingdom of Malchus Yisrael, when they are trying to resist the kingdom of Ashur, Sancheriv, who eventually destroyed and wiped out, not Sancheriv, but the kingdom of Ashur eventually destroyed Malchus Yisrael. And they had formed an alliance with Ritzin, the king of Aram, and hoped that he would back them up and defend them from Ashur. So at this point, Yeshaya says this nevuah. He says, "Dovar shalach Hashem b'Yaakov v'nofal b'Yisrael." That Hashem has sent word to Yaakov, and this will come to pass among Yisrael. But we know from this Gemara that this is referring to Gid HaNasha, that this is the heading of this section is there is an Isser of Gid HaNasha which has become accepted throughout the Jewish people. Now, with that understanding of the heading for the coming psukim, we can now read on. So he continues, V'yad'u ha'om kulo, all this nation shall know, Ephraim v'yoshev Shomron, the people of Ephraim and those who live in Shomron, b'ga'ava uvgoda levav lemor, and they live in pride and with an arrogant heart, and they say as follows, Levenim nafalu v'gozis nivne, bricks have fallen, we will rebuild with stone. Shikmim gudau va'arozim nachalif, and sycamores have been cut down, but we will replace them with cedars, which are stronger trees. And it continues, Vayisagev Hashem es tzorei ritzin olav. But Hashem has set Ritzin's enemies against him. And Ritzin, again, is the king of Aram, who are the allies of Malchus Yisrael. Es oyevav yisachsech, and his enemies will be roused against him. Aram mikedem uflishtim meachor. And then Aram will come from the east, and the Plishtim from the west, Bayochlu es Yisrael b'chol peh, and they will consume the Jewish people with every mouth, meaning total destruction, b'chol zos lo shav apo, and with all this his anger will not subside, v'od yadonu tiyah, and his hand is still outstretched, v'ha'am lo shav ad hamakehu, but the people have not repented and returned to the one who struck them, es Hashem tzvakos lo doroshu, and they did not seek Hashem. So what is happening in this story? In this story, the people have relied on, have put their hope in Ritzin. And even though they are facing tough times, and their previous efforts to defend themselves against Asher have failed, they're saying that we previously had bricks, and now we're going to rebuild with stone. They previously had sycamores, going to rebuild with cedars. In other words, saying we had poor kings until now. Rashi on the Pasuk talks about how the previous kings were weak, and now they have a new king called Pekach, and he was going to defend them. He was going to be a stronger king there, and they're going to rebuild their military, and they're going to build up their defenses, and then they'll be able to withstand Ashur with the help of their friends Aram. But what the Navi says is going to happen is that Hashem is going to send Ashur against Aram, and Aram is going to fall to them, and all of a sudden the Malchus Yisrael will be surrounded by enemies on all sides. And all their rebuilding and all their hope in their military might was going to fall apart, because Hashem had decided that it was their time. It was time for their punishment to come. Their averos were catching up to them, and this was the end of them. And they did not seek Hashem. That's why the Navi concludes with all this, they did not return to Hashem who was striking them. They did not seek out Hashem and return to Him. Now, this entire nevuah is under the heading of Davar Shalach Hashem B'Yaakov V'Nafal B'Yisrael. It's under the heading of, this is Gid HaNasha, whose prohibition has become accepted throughout Klal Yisrael. Because Rav Hirsch writes that the entire mistake of Malchus Yisrael, their reliance on their own might, their belief that they could just rebuild better and stronger than the last time, and their reliance on Aram to save them from Ashur, all of this flies in the face of the message of Gid HaNoshe, which had become so commonplace among them that they should have understood what the Gid HaNoshe was telling them. And if they would have paid attention to Gid HaNoshe and absorbed its message, they would not need this warning from Yeshaya. Because the Gid HaNoshe tells them that physical prowess, military might, and having that strong foundation is not going to help you unless you have the protection of Hashem, unless Hashem is looking out for you. And so it doesn't matter if you rebuild stronger. It doesn't matter if you have a better king. It doesn't matter who your allies are if you ignore Hashem in the process of building all that up. Because our protection comes only from Hashem. And without Him, all our efforts will come to nothing. So that's the message that Hashem is sending Yaakov Avinu by having him hurt, by having him injured in the Gid HaNoshe and interfering with his ability to walk and really leaving him unstable from a physical standpoint. The idea being that he and his descendants will be undermined physically and materially, but Hashem will be there for them. And that is and that will show Hashem's presence to the world, specifically in that way. and they should come to rely on. We should rely on Hashem, and recognize that only He can take care of us. And Rav Hirsch in Chorev devotes an entire chapter to the idea of Gid HaNoshe. It's chapter 37, which is found on page 173 in the Sensino printing of the Chorev, which I have. And here, I'm going to quote from the Chorev. It's a little bit longer than what I usually quote, but it's worthwhile to see it because he really summarizes it. And it's very succinctly put, very well put. So, and it also puts this idea of Gid HaNoshe in context of the story of Yaakov Avinu that we've seen in last week's parsha and how it continues to this week's parsha. So Rav Hirsch writes, Yaakov had gone through the testing school of Lavan, to whom he had come as a poor fugitive, bearing Avraham's blessing. For the first time, he steps out independent, the head of a family, and thus also of the tribe. He upon whose shoulders rests the destiny of a people must retreat to flee from the machinations of his own father-in-law. He upon whom the blessing was bestowed steps forward, care-laden and grief-stricken, to meet his brother, who, though not invested with the blessing, had already become a mighty tribal prince. And fear comes over Yaakov. He measures his small resources against the fully equipped might of his possibly hostile brother, and again fear comes over him. When he stepped out of his father's house, his mission became clear to him. In Beis El he beheld the angels, who ascending see the reflection of man's tasks in heaven, and descending compare with this the scene of man's life on earth. And so on this fateful night he learns his place in the outside world as bearer of this mission entrusted to him. And we discussed this in last week's share. A heavenly messenger wrestles with him, dislocates the vital sinews of his body, but Yaakov remains undefeated. And so it is when external power is pitted against external power. Yaakov remains the weaker, but he is not defeated. Nay, he stands victorious through his holy mission, the burden of which also carries with it God's protection. What this event expresses symbolically, his change of name expresses more clearly. He who is Yaakov to mankind, grasping the heel and retreating, now stands before God and so also before mankind as Tsar, as Prince, bearing witness by his name of Yisrael that God is Prince and Master of all. What Rav Hirsch is saying here also, he's adding an extra point to this, is that specifically here at the encounter with the Malach where Yaakov gets his name change. He changes his name from Yaakov to the one who's grabbing at the heel from behind, to Yisrael, the Prince of Hashem, the bearer of Hashem's name in history, because it is with the injured Gid HaNoshe that Yaakov becomes Yisrael. So Rav Hirsch concludes here in Chorev, and what the symbol of deed and word infused into the soul of the patriarch, his descendants must ever keep alive through laws which are symbolic, for they are bearers of the same mission and therefore partners in the same destiny. Yaakov before external might, but in their destiny and before God, Yisrael. Thus, this people, in itself nothing, yet with the help of God, everything, surviving and overcoming every storm through the omnipotence of God, and despite its helplessness, can declare to mankind Yisrael, God alone is master. But because of this, Yisrael's descendants must not be self-centered. They must not base their destiny upon human might and human cleverness. Yisrael's children must not feed themselves with Gid HaNoshe. And that is really the entire idea that we've been discussing till now. But it's really encapsulated in this idea, with this one sentence here, which of her says that how we as the Jewish people are in itself nothing, yet with the help of God, everything. And that's the message that the Gid HaNoshe is meant to teach us. That Hashem specifically wants us to be nothing in our own right, so that we can be everything with His help. And we must recognize that and focus on Him and not on building up our own strength. The other aspect of the parsha that I want to talk about from Rav Hirsch's commentary is how Rav Hirsch addresses the actions of Shimon and Levi in Shechem. And Yaakov's response to them. And some of this will resonate with us a little more in light of recent events in Eretz Yisrael and the self-defense that Jewish soldiers had to carry out in Eretz Israel over the last few weeks. So in discussing what Shimon and Levi did when they came up with this plan, how after Shechem captured Dinah, raped her, and wanted to marry her, so they had everybody in the town circumcise themselves, and then they entered the town when they were all too weak to defend themselves, and they killed all the inhabitants of the town of Shechem, and they took all their money and possessions, and that is how they avenged their honor. So, and then Yaakov complains to them afterwards and says you didn't do the right thing. In the end of Parak Lamed Dalad, Pasuk Lamed, Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon ve'el Levi. Yaakov says to Shimon and Levi, Achar temosi. You've brought me trouble, difficulty. V'havi sheni b'yoshvei aretz, to make me a pariah among the people who live in the land. V'kana'ani v'aprizi, among the Kananim and the Prizim, the natives of the land. V'ani misei mispar, I'm few in number. V'nesfu alai v'hikuni, they will gather up on against me and strike me. V'nishmadetzi ani uvesi, and I and my family will be destroyed. And they responded, v'yomeru, they said, hach zono ya'aseh achosenu. Shall he make our sister into a harlot? Shall he defile her and disgrace her and disgrace the honor of our family? So Rav Hirsch says that what Shimon and Levi did was wrong, but their motives were not wrong. It was how far they went in carrying it out. And that's what had Yaakov Avinu upset. They were absolutely justified in killing Shechem and his father Hamor for allowing this to happen. Because they recognized that Shechem saw an easy target in Dinah. They're foreigners, they're a small family of Jews who are different, they're the other, they're different than everybody else. So she was an easy target, easy to pick on, and they understood they had to stand up for themselves. And they had to take up the sword to defend the honor of their family and the purity of their family. And that's really because the truth is that the nations of the world don't recognize right, they recognize might. They don't recognize that this is the wrong thing to do, but the sword speaks to them, violence speaks to them, and they will respond to that. So Shimon and Levi wanted to frighten all the natives, all the nations around them, to say, don't pick on us, don't mess around with us, because we will stand up for ourselves and defend ourselves. They were speaking their language, basically. And it says of Hirsch, that's okay. But the problem was that they used disproportionate force, and they took out their anger on civilians who were not involved in the abduction of Dinah. The rest of the inhabitants were just there. They were just his subjects. They had nothing to do with this, but they were so caught up in their self-defense, in a way, in their actions that they were taking to defend themselves, that they felt it was also okay to go ahead and kill many other people who were innocent, and their only guilt was that their king had, their prince had committed a horrible crime, but it was not their fault. So, they were justified in their motives to stand up for their family member, and even to do so violently, and to take justice into their own hands, but they went too far, and that was wrong. And that's where Yaakov says, "Achar temosi," that you've brought trouble on me. He's basically saying, you've ruined my reputation, you've discredited me. Because now everybody's going to look at us and say, these are the people who are representing morality and representing their God, and this is what they do. This isn't right. And so their wrongful extra violence is what had Yaakov bothered, and that's where Shimon and Levi went wrong. But their response of Hachzona Yaaseh Achosenu indicates what their rationale was, but that doesn't mean that it was right. So Rav Hirsch says that he also adds that's interesting that here we tend to associate Yaakov and Esav with specific roles. There's Hakol Kol Yaakov and Yodayim Midei Esav. But Rav Hirsch says that we shouldn't necessarily feel boxed in by that, and that occasionally it is acceptable and correct for the descendants of Yaakov to take up the sword of Esav and to wield it appropriately. And he points to the final days of the Jewish state, of the Second Commonwealth, when the Jews stood up to the Romans, and the Romans had a really hard fight on their hands at the time of the Churban of Vayesheni, because the Jews stood up for themselves. And Rav Hirsch says that fighting spirit and that courage is also part of a Jew. Just because we are typically lovers of peace and we are typically try to avoid all violence, doesn't mean that we are not capable of acting violently and in a military fashion when the need arises and when the situation calls for it. Of course, provided, as we see from this story, that the violence is carried out appropriately. We also see another example, which Rav Hirsch does not mention, but comes to mind this time of year, is the story of the Chashmonaim, who took up their swords and fought a battle against the Greeks, the Syrian Greeks, in the time of Hanukkah, because in that situation it was called for, and provided that it was done appropriately. So, what's interesting is that I'm not sure exactly. I don't think Rav Hirsch was advocating, you know, a violent response to Jews to lift up their swords against non-Jews in the 19th century. I don't think that's what he was referring to in 19th century Europe. But he was just saying that it's important to realize that there is such a thing as a Jewish army, and there is such a thing as Jewish fighters and Jewish warriors and Jewish self-defense. And it's not something that should be completely foreign to the Jewish people. It's not something we enjoy and not something we like to use, but it's something that we're definitely capable of when need be, and the nations of the world should know that. And they should also know that we will stand up for one another. And Rav Hirsch discusses this story not from the aspect of violence, but just from the aspect of standing up for a fellow Jew and having Jewish pride and not letting everybody walk all over us. And so in the first essay that's in the sixth volume of the collected writings, where Rav Hirsch talks about what he calls what's called their Jewish solidarity and standing up for a fellow Jew and having pride in being Jewish and not letting the nations of the world just take advantage of us because of who we are, and not just turning the other cheek, as you might say. But sometimes it's important to take a stand in an appropriate way. And the verse shows how even Yaakov recognized the value of Shimon and Levi's approach, of their commitment to standing up for themselves. And he shows this in the bracha that Yaakov gives out on his deathbed. So it's well known that Shimon and Levi do not get a bracha; they get a curse. Right there, in Parshas Vayechi, in Perek Mem Tes Pasuk Hey. So Yaakov says to Shimon and Levi, he says, Shimon and Levi achim klei chamas mecherosehem, that they used violence, they prepared violence. And it was they with forethought went ahead and used violence excessively, and so he says bisodam al tavo nafshi bikhalam al techad kivodi, which means he used the word techad. Rav Hirsch says means like yachid, to be alone, meaning I don't want my essence to be their ideas alone, an untempered anger, an unrestrained violence. That's not the way. But he says, Orapam ki oz ve'ebrosam ki koshas. He curses their anger. He says, Achalakim b'Yaakov va'afitzein b'Yisrael. I will divide them up amongst Yaakov and scatter them among Yisrael. So in this expression of Achalakim b'Yaakov va'afitzein b'Yisrael, so why is it repeated? And why does he use both Yaakov and Yisrael here? The Torah explains that achalkim doesn't mean to divide them up and scatter them. It's not synonymous with afitzim. Achalkim means something different. Generally, when we say that someone is mechalik something, means he's dividing it up among people. And so what Yaakov is saying with achalkim b'Yaakov means I want that feeling divided up and apportioned out among all the Jewish people, among all the sons of Yaakov. Because that is that Jewish pride, that willingness to stand up for that stubbornness and toughness is a good quality when used appropriately. And when is it appropriate? It's appropriate by Yaakov. And as we mentioned earlier regarding the Gid Hanasha, Yaakov and Yisrael depict two different states. Yaakov is the Jewish people in a state of weakness, grasping the heel of those above them. So in a state of weakness, in a state of galus, when the Jewish people can be easily become downtrodden and give up hope on the fact that they are important and lose their self-confidence. So in a state of Yaakov, Rav Hirsch says, Achal came be Yaakov. I want this feeling of Jewish pride, of willing to stand up for themselves, of stubbornness and toughness. I want that distributed among all the Jewish people when they are in a state of Yaakov. But afitzim be Yisrael, I want them scattered when in a state of Yisrael. A state of Yisrael is a state of success, a state of triumph, a state of conveying the message of Hashem to the entire world. So when there is an independent Jewish state, Rav Hirsch writes, when there is a flourishing Jewish country, then Shimon and Levi don't get their own portions in Eretz Yisrael. They are scattered among all the people. They are divided up because we don't want that feeling of power, that stubbornness and that inclination towards violent self-defense. We don't want that power concentrated in one place where it could possibly flare up, because when the Jewish people have their own independence and are in their own state, then they have the capability to act on it. They have the capability to act on their indignation and act on it excessively. So then there's danger. So then afitzim be Yisrael. Then it has to be scattered and has to be tempered and has to be carefully thought over before acting on it. So we see how Shimon and Levi were not castigated because their entire approach was wrong and violence is wrong and they should not have started up at all. But their reaction is appropriate in the right situation, when used appropriately, and Yaakov, when assigning destiny to each of his children on his deathbed, he recognized that and wanted to ensure that the attitude of Shimon and Levi was recognized for what it was, as dangerous, but wanted to make sure that it was still utilized appropriately. Achal came be Yaakov, divided up among everybody in Galus, but afitzim be Yisrael, scattered when in a position of power and success and ability to translate those feelings into direct action. And Rav Hirsch writes how, Rav Hirsch just references this discussion of the Psukim in Parshas Vayechi here in Vayishlach, goes into more detail in Vayechi. But here, back here in Vayishlach, he adds that it's specifically because Jews by nature are tough and stubborn that Hashem chose us to be His messengers in the world, because it's specifically that Hashem took us and despite our toughness and stubbornness, we still give in to the will of Hashem and yield to Him. That makes us powerful instruments in the hand of Hashem and powerful role models for the rest of the world. That if we, which were called in the words of Chazal, the Az Sheba Umos, the toughest of all nations, if we can yield to Hashem, then so can everybody else. And that's an example that we set for the world. But Hashem had, and he writes that Hashem had to bring the Bnei Yisrael to Mitzrayim, to the Kur HaBarzel of Mitzrayim, to the iron crucible, to melt them down, to melt away the toughness, and then show that Hashem is the one who controls their destiny, and so that toughness can be molded to fit to the will of Hashem, to stubbornly carry out the will of Hashem in all situations. and that can be translated into Jewish pride and standing up for ourselves in a situation of achal kein biyakov. But of course, has to be watched carefully in a situation of afitzim bi Yisrael to be on top of it, to monitor these feelings and make sure to carry it out in an appropriate way, which is something that Shimon and Levi did not control properly when they murdered all the inhabitants of Shechem. And so this is how Rav Hirsch reads the story of Shechem and Shimon and Levi, and what they did right, what they did wrong, and what we can learn from them, and how we can translate the message into our own lives in a way that will benefit us, and in a way where we will not overstep our boundaries.